It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. When severe weather strikes, you'll hear National Weather Service watches and warnings broadcast on WPR. People in every corner of Wisconsin and the nation rely on the Weather Service for timely reports and life-saving information. But along with other agencies, the National Weather Service is dealing with a personnel storm, as hundreds of its jobs have been eliminated at field offices in recent months by the White House's cost-cutting efforts. An open letter from previous Weather Service directors warns of the dire impact of these funding cuts. In the letter, the leaders say their worst nightmare is the cuts will lead to needless loss of life. We're looking at the potential effects here in Wisconsin. Bob Lindmeyer recently retired as senior chief meteorologist at WKOW-TV and is a member of the committee on the station's scientist. And Chris Vigasky is manager of the Wisconsin Environmental Mesonet, or WiscoNet. That's a network of weather and soil monitoring stations across the state. Chris and Bob, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for having me as well.
Bob, an open letter is circulating from all five former directors of the National Weather Service warning that lives are at stake here with the recent funding cuts to the National Weather Service. What stands out to you about the sentiment in this letter?
I just entirely agree with the sentiment. I think their concerns are entirely justified. I've worked a lot with local National Weather Service offices in Wisconsin throughout my career. They're wonderful. Broadcast meteorologists cannot do their job without them. So I'm very concerned, as they are, about the staff reductions that are going on.
And this letter says that the White House's budget blueprint for 2026 would essentially eliminate NOAA's research functions for weather. How much is weather research embedded in NOAA's mission as a federal agency?
It's a big part, no doubt about it. And over the years, I've relied heavily on the research that they've put out, especially in regards to climate change. So that's a huge thing. It would be immensely impactful in a negative way to the ongoing research that's going on about climate change. NOAA has a big part to do with that, with that research.
NOAA being a part of the National Weather Service, and the Weather Service has lost hundreds of positions. We've seen reports that NOAA is in the process of rehiring, some of these employees at its field offices to refill roles. Is it risky for weather prediction as jobs change hands here?
Without doubt. That disruption, it's a finely tuned machine that the National Weather Service and NOAA has had ongoing for many, many years in regards to all aspects of what they do. When you disrupt that finely tuned machine, it's hard to get it back going the way it was. So firing, rehiring is, I think, very disruptive in the goals that NOAA has.
Chris, turning to you, these cuts to federal funding and staffing shortages, they've led to weather balloon launches being canceled. The National Weather Service says it launches weather balloons twice daily from 100 upper air sites. Can you tell us what normally happens with these balloons when all is going according to plan?
Yeah, of course. So meteorologists have been launching weather balloons for almost 100 years now. We continue to do it because that is the only way that we get direct measurements of everything that's going on above us in the atmosphere. We can't install 100,000-foot-tall weather stations. That would have significant impacts on aviation and everything else that goes on, and not to mention it would be very expensive, and I don't know too many people that would want to climb a 100,000-foot tower.
No.
So what we do is attach radio sondes, which is a small all-in-one weather station, to the bottom of a balloon and let that balloon rise through the atmosphere and collect those measurements. We get measurements of temperature, humidity, wind speed, wind direction, air pressure every 15 feet through the atmosphere. And that is a huge component of the weather modeling that helps us to make predictions for the short term and for the long term.
We have one weather balloon launch site here in Wisconsin, that being in Green Bay. Do you know if the launch schedule there has been affected at all?
The Green Bay office was one of the first sites to actually have a reduction in balloon launches. That has come back closer to normal. They've been doing twice daily balloon launches, but it is still at risk if staffing shortages or funding cuts continue to be in place, because it takes two people to do a balloon launch, and it's a couple-hour process. This balloon is 5 to 6 feet in diameter when it's fully inflated, and if it's breezy, it can, you know, drag somebody around. So, you know, they have these, you know, procedures in place to make sure that we are able to collect the data and keep people safe. So if there are any continued staffing shortages, funding cuts, that puts the Wisconsin's balloon launch site at risk again.
Not to mention the balloons themselves. I wonder, what is the shelf life of weather balloons? Is there wear and tear on these balloons?
So the radiosonde, the measurement equipment itself, can last for about 2 to 3 years. The balloons themselves are a very big latex balloon. So if they do have UV that shines down on them, they can deteriorate. So those do have a shelf life of about a year. So as long as we can move through the balloon launches as normal, we're not running the risk of, you know, things expiring. But we do need to be continuing to do those balloon launches for the forecasting applications.
Bob, connect these weather balloons to the work that meteorologists are putting together ahead of the nightly news.
Yes, we use them all the time. We look at those temperature profiles that the radio sondes produce to help us especially analyze severe weather. There are patterns that you look for in that upper air data in terms of temperature, dew point, all the different variables that was just mentioned that helps us determine the potential of severe weather. So that's probably one of the biggest ways that we use that upper air data directly as broadcast meteorologists. But the other part is just, again, the data that they supply to the supercomputers that run the models that we rely on every day as well.
Chris, while we're on the topics of weather balloons, do they launch at all in areas where there might be air traffic? What is communication like with air traffic controllers?
Yeah, so a lot of these are very close to airports. So the Green Bay office is almost directly across the street from the Green Bay Airport. There's multiple balloon launches a day near Dulles Airport. The Fairbanks, Alaska balloon site is on the Fairbanks Airport. So there is the potential that air traffic could be impacted or could impact the balloon launch. So what happens is before the launch is done, the meteorologist is in contact with the air traffic control and saying, okay, we're getting ready to launch the balloon. Air traffic control gives them the all clear, and then they launch the balloon.
Do they land in typical places?
So the balloons, once they get to about 100 to 120,000 feet, they pop and the radio sound falls back to Earth.
Oh, the payload. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And, you know, it gently falls to the surface. And they can fall anywhere, in farmers' fields, get stuck in a tree. So they go where the wind takes them, and they fall where the wind takes them. There is now, you know, it started in Europe, and it's now becoming more of a thing here in the United States, of radio sound chasers.
Oh.
So hobbyists that track where the balloons are going so that they can go and intercept the radio sound as it falls, and they keep it as a souvenir. They do things with the electronics. So,
kind of like storm chasers in a way.
It is a little bit of a storm chasing type feel.
Yes. We were talking about federal funding cuts and staffing shortages affecting local weather coverage with retired WKOW-TV meteorologist Bob Lindmeyer is here and weather balloon expert Chris Vagasky, who manages the Wisconsin Environmental Mesonet, or WISCONET. That's a network of weather and soil monitoring stations across the state. Chris, how could the Mesonet be affected by instability and cuts to NOAA? Is it possible that WISCONET could even fill a void?
Yeah, so one of the goals with WISCONET, and we started it in the spring of 2023, was to fill data gaps in the state. So a lot of people are probably familiar with the temperature and wind speed measurements that you see on TV. Those typically come from airport weather stations, but that leaves a lot of space that isn't covered by a nearby weather station. I think of Clark County. That was one of the first weather stations that we put in as WiscoNet. And there were no weather stations, no high-quality weather stations within 20 miles of that county. So we were able to get a new WiscoNet station located in Greenwood that fills that data void. And we're trying to get everybody in Wisconsin within about 20 miles of one of our weather stations or an existing airport weather station, which will give meteorologists really high-quality weather data every 5 minutes. So we can give very real-time information as storms are moving across the state. And just the other night, we measured a 78-mile-per-hour wind gust in Bayfield as a derecho came across northern Wisconsin. So this has real impacts and real benefits for protecting lives, protecting property, and enhancing the economy of Wisconsin.
Farmers rely on this data. Could Wisconsin farmers be affected as weather data becomes less reliable or perhaps more scarce?
They absolutely could, especially if you think about our Central Sands region. Irrigation is an extremely important part of growing because the sands, water just drains through the sands very quickly. And so the growers, they need to know, how much water did I use yesterday? How much water did we lose through evapotranspiration? How much rain fell? So they can make better irrigation decisions. So by putting weather stations in key locations, key growing locations, Hancock and Plover in Green Lake County and Marquette County, it really helps the agronomists, it helps the farmers, it helps the backyard gardeners to know, how do I plan for my garden? How do I plan for my crops today?
That takes a reliable funding source to put these monitoring stations in around the state. Do you feel you have that?
You know, we are funded through the USDA Rural Partnerships Institute through 2027, and then the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation gave us an initial funding seed to purchase the equipment. So we are funded through 2027. We feel confident in that. But beyond that, we do need to have continued support to be able to maintain and install even more stations.
Bob, I wonder, when you retired after 45 years, did you give any parting advice to the meteorologist who filled your shoes? And if you did, is there something applicable now in this political climate we're in?
Yeah, you know, one thing that we realize, there's a lot of research that's gone on in the public in terms of with how they feel about climate change, whether they believe it or not. And the overwhelming majority of people do believe in climate change. There's this small percentage of maybe 5% that are very vocal denialists. And unfortunately, they have an impact. So when a broadcast meteorologist talks about climate change, they hear from that small percentage in an outsized way. And one thing that I've done and the station scientist committee has done that I'm part of is just encourage broadcast meteorologists to continue to speak out about climate change. Don't let that small percentage of your viewership that doesn't like what you're saying, don't let them discourage you, because the overwhelming majority of people either believe in climate change or they're receptive to listening to what you say and change their minds and become more receptive about climate change and that it's happening, that it's human caused.
Chris, someone might say, well, I can just check my phone. My phone app tells me that what the weather is doing right now, and it gives me lots of information. What goes into that, or how do we make the connection to what we see on our phone?
Yeah, you know, everybody looks at the weather app on their phone. It's, you know, the first thing you do in the morning, even before looking to see what time it is. It's, okay, what's the temperature? You know, 7.5 billion people on the planet are impacted by the weather every day. So, you know, it doesn't matter which side of the political spectrum you're on, you're affected by the weather. The weather apps that you have are collecting data that is generated by the National Weather Service. It's generated by state mesonets and other groups that are out there to better understand the weather. As Bob had mentioned, the Weather Service is the group that issues severe thunderstorm and tornado warnings, flash flood warnings, all of those hazardous weather alerts. without the Weather Service, you're not getting that information on your phone. The weather radar is run by the FAA, the DOD, and the NWS. Without them, without the funding, those radars are going to start being out of spare parts in about 10 years. The National Weather Service is working on a Radar Next program, which requires research and it requires funding so that we can create the next generation of weather radars before the network of over 160 radars starts losing the components that are necessary for those radars to operate. And weather radar is a huge, huge contributor to understanding severe weather, whether it's severe thunderstorms, tornadoes, blizzards, ice storms. So all of the information that you're getting on your phone that you're not thinking of, where is it coming from? It's federally funded for the most part.
Bob, can you speak to the technology in newsrooms with radar and the upgrades that need to have happen in order to make those forecasts and prediction centers as well?
Yeah, as just mentioned, the NexRad radars, the next generation radars, which have been around now for a long time, are just so essential to what we do and what the National Weather Service does in terms of issuing tornado watches and warnings. What they've done with these radars is put a lot of technology into them. They've developed computer programs that can further analyze what the radar images show, and they can pick up vorticities, they can pick up spins, they can pick up hail, they can pick up dirt and damage that's been injected into the atmosphere. So the NexRad radar is everything. It's what we rely on almost 100% in terms of issuing severe weather watches, warnings. It's something that we rely on just extensively, to say the least.
I wonder, Bob, what are you watching for with the National Weather Service as these cuts unfold and the different reorganizations take place?
Yeah, you know, it's something that I watch carefully, and it just worries me so much, because it's just not the forecasters, it's the maintenance people that keep those NexRad radars running. My impression is that the National Weather Service has been dealing with the cuts that have been issued so far for the most part, but further cuts that are being discussed and talked about would just it would impact in such a negative way that I think your listeners will really notice what's happening. They'll notice forecast deterioration. They'll notice the warnings are not as effective. They're not as timely. That it will manifest itself with further cuts.
Bob and Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
That is Chris Vigasky, manager of WiscoNet, a statewide network of weather and soil monitoring stations, and retired senior chief meteorologist at WKOW-TV, Bob Lindmeyer. We've been talking about how the Trump administration ordered hundreds of staffing cuts at the National Weather Service and how that could affect weather reports and research here in Wisconsin. Still ahead on Wisconsin Today, high school students in Chippewa Falls are leading an effort to bring solar power to a nearly century-old youth camp in Wisconsin.
In the last, like, 5-6 months, we've worked super hard to get solar on the camp, and now we're just excited to finish the project and to have the legacy of sustainable energy there.
Camp Nawakwa goes green. That story is next from WPR News.